welcome back for another dose of the Michael Deacon program. First-time listeners out there, it's a pleasure to meet all of you. Joining me tonight is a very, very special guest making her debut here tonight, Kathleen Brush. Kathleen is an avid researcher and writer on subjects like racism and women's leadership. Her articles and interviews have been published by Fox, CNBC, Fox Business, Washington Post, and the list goes on and on. Her latest book is America's Discrimination Circus. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing us into your hearts and into your minds. Here we are again on a night like this. Good evening, everyone. Glad to be here again. Good afternoon to all of you on the West Coast. Guten Morgen to our friends from around the world. Last episode was pretty intense, as you know. It was like an episode out of the Jerry Springer Show, to say the very least. Tonight will be slightly more tame, I believe, but when talking about race in America, that opens up Pandora's box. Now, without further ado, she has been patiently waiting here. Let's bring her right in, and I believe Kathleen is ready. Kathleen, are you alive out there?
I am absolutely alive.
Thank you so much for being here, Kathleen. I apologize for the delay there. The computer was going insane as always.
They have a tendency to do that.
Oh, yes. And Kathleen, by the way, are you open for calls tonight?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I do want to invite all of you out there listening in tonight to participate by calling in. Please don't be shy. That number is 424-666-2425. It will appear on your screen. But yes, call in. Don't be shy. And Kathleen, again, I really do appreciate you being here. There's so much to talk about with you here tonight.
Yes, I agree. There's tons to talk about when it comes to the issue of racism in America.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you made it. Many of our listeners were extremely excited to know that you would be appearing here tonight. And of course, my mood has been up and down, but, you know, I use my darkest thoughts to fuel my motivation for the show and for life itself, Kathleen. I'm sure you're familiar with those sort of things.
Well, I would say that when it comes to talking about racism in America, if you're talking to me, you should feel like you have a very bright day in front of you.
Oh, yes.
Because America is the anti-racist leader.
I agree. And Kathleen, you know, many listeners out there have never heard of you before. I thought we could sort of talk about your background and sort of figure out, you know, who Kathleen really is. We like to sort of x-ray all the guests here that appear on the program.
Okay. Well, I've been a businesswoman for most of my life. I fixed broken high-tech companies that brought me to a lot of different foreign countries. But then when I got interested in studying events around the world, it took me to a lot more countries. And by the way, I have a PhD in management and international studies, which jives with my business background and my love for all things international. But anyway, in my travels, you know, one of the things in my studies, one of the things that I, you know, sort of accidentally stumbled upon was how pervasive racism is in extremely heinous forms, certainly nothing like you would ever see in the United States, exists all over the world. And so I really heightened my interest into writing specifically about racism last summer when I saw people chanting systemic racism, systemic racism, systemic racism. And I'm not going to celebrate the 4th of July because I'm not proud to be an American because of our racism. And that's sort of when I said, okay, I've heard enough and I need to spend some concerted effort into setting the record straight, because there is one thing that I know, and that is that America is not systemically racist and that it is the anti-racist leader. And so, you know, first I came up and I wrote a book called Racism and Anti-Racism in the World Before and After 1945. And then I decided I'm just going to go for it and really focus in on what I see going on in the United States. And as I did my research there, there was only one conclusion, and that was that it is a discrimination circus. And so that's why I got to my second book. But anyway, it certainly has been a fun journey. being able to leverage my background and experience to be able to write about something, to, you know, to defend the United States, because the United States is a great country, and it's a great country when it comes to how it treats its diverse ethnicities. And I think it's really important for people to speak out, because right now there's not a lot of people doing that.
Understood. And it seems like a lot of these subjects, whether it be defending women's rights, the Me Too movement, the BLM, any kind of movement, there's always that, you know, all these messages, they start off in a positive way, Kathleen, but then they sort of end up not being so positive after all. Would you agree with that, Kathleen, or is that a negative thing to say?
Yeah, you know, I suppose I do agree with you. I actually spent quite a bit of time prior to this analyzing the hashtag MeToo movement. And, you know, I agree that started out as a very positive
sure.
movement. And then it sort of turned into a situation where it was a war on men. And, you know, and to me, you know, I mean, I'm absolutely pro women. I've spent a lot of time
That's right.
trying to advance women in leadership. But, you know, I'm also an objective analyst. And what I saw happening was there was a war on men and they were defenseless. And there's a great parallel to what's actually going on, and that was triggered by Black Lives Matter. And that is that it sort of, you know, started out with drawing attention to issues, you know, maybe specific issues that Black people have. And then it turned into a war on white people, you know, so it sort of took the same path, which, you know, I think is consistent with what you said.
Yeah. Everything sort of starts off in a, you know, everyone has, you know, their heart in the right place, that sort of thing. But then it sort of snowballs and sort of downward spiral into chaos, Kathleen. We've seen it time and time again. It's insane.
I agree with that. But I think that the chaos that has been unfurled on the nation this time is really quite a bit more significant than anything hashtag Me Too did.
Oh, yes, I agree. What's happening now is pretty ridiculous. And I would have to say the media is actually much more responsible than just, you know, like the normal citizens out there. People aren't really that into all this sort of jazz. You know, we're kind of in the lower demographic, I guess we can say, Kathleen, those that are watching things from the outside. You know, we're just outside perspectives. That's all.
Well, you know, I agree with you from the point that, yes, the media bears a lot of blame here.
I'm not home.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
The media bears a lot of blame, but I think it should be well known, if it's not, that the media takes its cue from politics. And so,
right.
You know, so this all started in the midst of the Donald Trump presidency. And you know, and as I think everyone knows, there were tremendous forces working against Trump and anything that he stood for, you know. And so, you know, Black Lives Matter comes up and Trump is trying to say, you know, hey, it's not that bad. And the media is like, if he's saying it's not that bad, we're going to say it's really bad. And they did. And, you know, we got bombarded with systemic racism, systemic racism, systemic racism. We've got systemic racism in healthcare. We've got systemic racism in education. We've got systemic racism in policing, and on and on and on. And frankly, I spent a lot of time, hours and hours and hours, debugging every one of these claims. And you know what I came up with? No systemic racism.
Yes, that was the question here being asked tonight for, you know, the title of this program. And of course, those in the chat, they can say whether or not they believe if America is systemically racist or not. That is sort of the topic here. But
let me go in and sort of define the term. Okay?
Go for it.
Okay, so systemic racism, what it means is that the systems are racist. So America's systems, right? Systemic racism are racist. Well, in America did have a problem with systemic racism that was prior to 1964. In 1964, the Civil Rights Act was passed, and it said, you know, we will not tolerate racism in our systems anymore. And they were the first nation, we are the first nation in the world to do that. And from that point forward, people were on notice that it was no longer okay. Now, I do want to clarify that systemic racism exists all over the world. And it exists in systemic forms, like it's baked into legal systems.
Right.
And it's like, and we said, no, we're not doing this. This is wrong. And we proceeded to just come up with all kinds of laws. We had the private sector was just 100% supportive. You know, they took a little bit of encouragement from the courts. But that all sorted out by the end of the 1970s. And then we had, you know, I mean, let me, you know, so, you know, I know some people are saying, well, you know, she's saying there's no systemic racism, but, you know, we see systemic racism, or we see what we think is systemic racism, or at least we hear that there's systemic racism. Yeah. And so let me tell you where these systemic racism thoughts come from, right? So systemic racism has been redefined multiple times in the United States. So we have Project 1619, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with. So they define systemic racism in America, and they say, look, you have the original sin of slavery, and you can never get away from that original sin of slavery. It doesn't matter that nobody in America today had a slave. It doesn't matter that only 1.4% of Americans in 1860 had a slave. It doesn't matter that we have, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation, the 14th Amendment. We cannot escape it, right? And to that I say, garbage. And then we have Ibram X. Kendi, the anti-racist czar, the guy who wrote anti-racism, I don't know, how to dispense with racism or something. But anyway, he's this celebrity that, you know, and he's on CNN, and Bill and Melinda Gates use him, and politicians interview him. And he says, we have systemic racism in America because America was the first country to engage in racism. It is unique to the United States. And, you know, and I hear that and my head wants to explode. You know, it's like, have you never been outside the United States? Do you not know anything about history?
A lot of people haven't left the United States. That's true.
well, they should. If they want to learn about racism, they should leave the United States. Because I'll tell you, your eyes will be open. I've been to 114 countries and counting. And I can tell you, I know what systemic racism looks like.
You've seen it.
It's not what we have. That's right. You do see it when you go to these other countries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're sitting there and you're like, oh, my God, that's crazy. Or in my case, it's like, no, I'm sorry, man. We're not going to serve you. You're the wrong color. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So, Kat, that's another thing I did want to ask you. You know, in your travels, what are some of the examples that you could probably share with us that you have sort of like picked up on?
Sure. I mean, you know, it actually depends on where I've been.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the Middle East, it was real different.
Yeah.
It was truly unbearable. And I didn't know, you know, if I was facing discrimination based on the color of my skin, because I wasn't wearing a hijab, because I was Christian. I wasn't sure, but I faced it everywhere.
All of the above, maybe.
Yeah, it was. It was all of the above, and it was everywhere. You know, it's like, if you ever wanted to feel like you're not welcome, go to the Middle East. You know, but that's why I went there. I wanted to know what it feels like to be a white woman walking around the Middle East. And so I did.
You wanted to live dangerously, Kathleen. My goodness.
Well, I'll tell you, I did one even better than that.
I went to
Venezuela.
Oof.
And yeah, that was truly living dangerously. And when this man picked me up and he said, You're the first tourist we've seen in years. but you know, so there in Venezuela, the discrimination I faced was anti-American. Oh my God, it was intense. I walked up to this museum. I was dying to learn more about Simone Bolivar, who I've read a great deal about. And I stood there and they came out and they said, "You're not coming in here. We don't want Americans here." And then I walked down the street and there was all these giant tents out there and people were chanting "Death to America." I thought I was in Iran.
Wow.
But anyway, so I'm with this guy and he's like, "Okay, let's take a right here. You don't want to be in this crowd." And it's like, "You're right. I don't want to be in this crowd, but I'm glad I was able to experience."
Yeah, look, luckily you weren't like seriously harmed, Kathleen, in any of these travels of yours.
No, you're right. I was lucky. But you know what? I do my research, and there's just sometimes when it's like I can't get my arms around it because I find it so unbelievable that it could be that bad. And then every time I get on a plane and I go to this suspect, you know, destination, I get there and it's like, oh my God, it's worse. You know, and it's just because you can't imagine it because we really do live in a wonderful society here.
That's true.
We do accept all people. I mean, I know, you know, there's people that can point to the ad hoc racist, and those races come in all colors and ethnicities. But it's like, by and large, this is a wonderful nation for diverse people, the best in the world.
I agree. And what do you have to say about those people out there listening, you know, the ones that are not, you know, Caucasian, the ones that are like saying right now, "Well, what does this crazy cracker know about race?" You know, there's people out there that are saying that right now, probably.
Well, I think what does this crazy cracker know about race? That's actually quite good because as I was just talking to you, I know what racism feels like. I've experienced it.
Right.
But I have studied discrimination in the United States and in the world for over 12 years. And I'm not talking about cursory research.
Yeah.
I'm talking about day in, day out studying this. And I do know what racism looks like. And by the way, for the people that are non-white in the United States, you know, I am familiar with racism throughout our history from 1607 and on. And I know who has experienced racism and who has not. And the list of who has not is infinitesimally small. It has been, you know, creating the United States was just one giant petri dish of trying to figure out how to get diverse ethnicities to live in one nation. It had never been tried before. You know, in fact, in the 17th century, Europe got so tired of these cross-ethnic wars, you know, that they finally sat down and they said, the only way to make this stop is to draw boundaries, to make nations, and to fill it with people that are all the same. Because if we don't have people that are all the same, all we're going to have is conflict. But, you know, the United States, you know, we needed people. We needed people. And everyone came to the United States. So it was this live petri dish of having diverse ethnicities learn to live with each other.
Right. I agree with you on a lot of the things that you talk about here, but I also have to bring up, what about Asian Americans? They say there's a disturbing rise in attacks since COVID happened, Kathleen. What do you have to say about that sort of case in particular?
Well, you know, I mean, I've looked at it, and I think, you know, the analysis is that most of the anti-Asian hate crimes are being carried out by Black people. And so I look at that and I think, you know, we've had this happen in our past before.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what happens is that the first time it happened was with the Jews in America. And the Jews were doing fine when they were sort of small in number and not very successful. When they became larger in number and they became quite successful, we started seeing them facing a lot of discrimination, you know, and it's sort of, you know, it's sort of a jealousy or an envy, you know. It's not really, I don't see it as like ethnically or racially motivated. You know, every time I've looked at, you know, discrepancies and conflict between different ethnic groups, I never see that it's race or ethnicity per se, but I always find that there's some type of economic rationale that's behind it.
I see.
You know? And so it's like, you know, competing for jobs or, you know, just being too successful and sort of showing off. And I guess that, you know, the United States can commiserate with the Asians, right? Nobody cared about us in America until we became big and powerful, you know, and then everyone put a target on our back. And you know, I think something, you know, similar has happened to the Asians. And of course, right now they're also struggling because, you know, people have been boxed in for over a year.
Over a year now, yeah.
They have. And, you know, and it's like, oh, now we got the, you know, I shouldn't say now, we have the Wuhan lab leak, right? It's finally, you know, I mean, that existed for a long time, but it's like, oh no, wait a second. It may very well have come from China. And the problem for the poor Asians is that Americans can't tell the difference between a Chinese person and a Japanese person.
Or a Korean person, yeah.
It's awful. But I can say, you know, I know quite a lot of Asian people living here in Seattle, and we're not running into a lot of difficulties. Most people are smart enough not to engage in discriminatory behaviors for something silly.
Yeah, most people are not like that, though. Most people are not willing to sort of ruin someone's day over their race. You know, it's a very small number.
Exactly.
Out there. But the media likes to portray it as it's a larger than life issue.
Well, you know, Michael, if you want to talk about larger than life issues, right? Let's take a look at the police killings of Black people.
Sure.
You know, I mean, so they did this survey earlier in the year and they said, you know, how many, they wanted to know how many unarmed Black people were killed by police in 2019? And so for liberals, it was 44% that it was about 1,000. 25% said it was 10,000 or more unarmed Black people killed by police. But then even if you looked at conservatives, they overestimated it by a long shot. You know, the number was actually 14. But if you eliminate the people that were unarmed but attacked police with something like a car and tried to kill them, it got down to 6, right? And so here, you know, they do this survey and people are saying it was 1,000, it was 10,000, it was 6, right? But people are watching TV, anyone that's watching the news, all they see are, you know, unarmed Black people being killed by cops. But it was 6, not 1,000, not 10,000, 6. You know, and so I've looked at the data for the anti-Asian hate crimes, and you know, and I certainly have seen it on TV, and really it just breaks my heart. But you know, and then I've looked at the data too, and it's like, huh, well, the vast majority, and I'm thinking, you know, 90% or more, was slurs or, you know, unkind looks or something like that. You know, and so it's like, I don't know what, you know, I don't know what a slur is. I know what a slur is, but I've looked up the slur database, right?
Yeah.
And there's like 10,000 slurs in there, and I'm like, that's a slur? I mean, if I call a Black person brother, that's a slur.
That's slur, I guess. I had no clue.
See it, but it's in the slur database.
Oh my. I better stop saying that. by the way, Kathleen, have you here like in America, have you ever been like told off by anyone before?
Me? Yeah, I was a woman that grew up in high tech.
Well, in that case, yeah, I would imagine that you for sure had that incident happen to you. But in terms like of a racial sort of slur, has anything been, you know, thrown your way?
But you know, it's honestly, Michael, it's very hard for me to tell. You know, I am not attuned to racism, and throughout my career, I was not attuned to sexism. You know, it's like people said stuff, they did stuff. I didn't care. You know, it's like, look, I'm just going out there and I'm going to do my job and I'm going to be successful. And I didn't care, you know, and so, you know, sometimes when I see these, you know, I read this study earlier in the year, and it was like, 85% of Black people said that they've faced systemic discrimination while they were out shopping in the last year. You know, and it's like, maybe I did too.
And you didn't notice.
I just, because part of me was like, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the study and I'm like, really, 85%? I mean, we're in a pandemic. People had masks on. A lot of people had hats on. I mean, were people like really like studying people above their mask to see what color they were and then like saying something nasty to them? And it's right. Like, you know what? I'm just not buying it. But you know what? It's like, but you know, if you're highly attuned to thinking that there's racism or discrimination, and Blacks are the most highly attuned to it via studies, not via Kathleen Brush, it's like, yeah, you can just start seeing it everywhere. But I don't see it anywhere. Not for me. You know, it's just like, I'm just going about my business.
So Kathleen, let's say for an example, let's say you're like at Target or you're at Trader Joe's, you know, you're walking around and you see like a group of Black guys. Do you walk around them or do you just go along your business there, Kathleen? I'm just curious.
I don't avoid anyone.
That's now, kind of a joke, walking, but yes.
Now, if I was walking down a dark street and I saw some people on the other side of the road, I'd probably take a right.
I would agree. You know, for me personally, it wouldn't just be because of the race. It would just be if I saw a bunch of people around. I'm someone who doesn't really want to be around a lot of people regardless. But, you know, I see people and I think, well, this could be a potential nuisance. You know, this is a potential problem here.
Well, I mean, that's sort of what they, you know, that's an unconscious bias, right?
I see that about everybody, though, you know.
Well, no, but no, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you know, and so to answer your question, no, I would never do that.
Okay.
You know, if I sense danger with anyone, yeah, then that would be it. But I don't interrupt my day based on the color of anyone's skin because I don't see anyone as being different.
I agree. You know, I see everyone as equally as the next person. It's always, you know, once you do something that crosses the line, that's when I see you in a negative way.
No, that's absolutely right. And I think everyone does that of all colors and creeds.
Right. And of course, I met folks who I found to be prejudiced, though, against certain ethnic groups. But I wouldn't exactly consider them racist, though. There's a bit of a difference, I would say. There's a slight difference.
Well, now, you know, the
both are not very good, in my opinion, by the way. But yes.
Yeah. So incidentally, I didn't finish the systemic racism.
Oh, yes. Go ahead, Kathleen. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Because the one that's most prevalent today is the one that comes from critical race theory. And that is that as long as people think biased thoughts, there will be systemic racism.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. So I've studied unconscious bias for years, and I did it mostly for women, but it was all applicable to race. So this is what I know about unconscious bias. And, you know, this is the stuff that they're trying to tackle with these sensitivity trainings and these white supremacy trainings. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get people to dismiss biased thoughts, right? And as we just talked about,
yeah,
you know, biased thoughts can actually be very helpful for protecting you. But biased thoughts result in discriminatory actions 4% of the time, 4%, right? So, you know, a lot of times people are like, you know, say it's a Black person, Asian person, Latino person, whatever yeah. person comes in and they immediately conjure up a stereotype, right? But then as the people start talking, they interact, the stereotype goes away.
It goes away.
Right? Because the person's not a stereotype anymore. Now they're a real person and they don't resemble anything like the stereotype. But anyway, so only 4% of these biased thoughts result in discriminatory actions. Now, what is a discriminatory action? Well, it includes eye rolls, shrugs, things like a Latino person saying that wants to donate money, saying, I'm going to donate to Argentina rather than Somalia or China.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Right. And so it's like, right. Really? Is this what we're talking about for systemic racism? Because this isn't really seeming like it's all that big of a deal, you know, but that's the major one that the systemic racist chanters are hanging their hat on. And, you know, to me, it's like, there's no there. You know, it's like, So people think biased thoughts. If they don't result in biased actions, that they're just, then do we really care? I mean, do we really care? I don't care. I mean, I can't control what people think, and no one will be able to control people the way people think. And as far as critical race theory goes, saying, well, we'll have systemic racism for as long as people think biased thoughts. Well, then we're going to have systemic racism until we blow up the human race.
Pretty much. Yeah. Where does it end? That's the question.
Well, it does.
You know, it doesn't end. That's the problem. I mean, it's insane, though, Kathleen. Here we are, 2021, you know, halfway through the year, and we're talking about race. I mean, it's a little crazy to me. I mean, there's so many things out there going on in the world, and most of the time the media is focused on race. I mean, I guess it's because it draws so much money.
You know, I can't tell you. You know, I think that, you know, as we talked about earlier, it comes from politicians.
Right.
And right now, if you're listening to the politicians, it's all about race. You know, so, you know, I was just working on this paper and it's like, you know, any day now, you know, we could see China, you know, take over Taiwan. And we're going to be so busy talking about race that it's going to catch us off guard. You know, and it's like, aren't these the things that we should be thinking about?
I mean, right.
These are like really big things and real things that could really hurt us. Not like some unconscious thought.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking this is like a major distraction from something else, possibly, as it usually goes with the media.
Yeah.
That's what I'm wondering. What's going on behind the scenes for reals? You know, this is one story they want us to focus on. It's like a magician, you know.
You mean like one hand, they don't want us thinking about the southern border or inflation or, you know, on and on.
The list goes on. And Lilith in the chat says, no matter your race, not everybody's going to like you. And I agree 100%.
Well, yeah, no, but, you know, I think we have to get back to most people don't care what somebody's color or ethnicity is.
Right.
You know, they make their friends by people's characters, who they get along with, and they don't care what they look like. They don't.
Right. That's not the way it is, though, in other countries, though, that's for sure. That's when you see real racism for sure.
No, absolutely, and it'll be blatant. I mean, it'll be blatant in actions, then it'll be blatant in words.
Oh yes, and I believe there was some incident going on with soccer, or as they say in Europe, football. I guess they're having lots of issues. You know, players are being called monkeys, and sort of, you know, people are saying unkind words to them on the field. But that sort of thing has been going on for a long time, actually.
Yeah, you know, it has been going on for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it gets, it certainly gets addressed in most places in Europe because they don't tolerate it. But when it comes to Russia or China, I mean, and you're talking about black people.
Sure.
I mean, it's funny. It's funny to them. It's absolutely funny. They can report about it in the press and it's funny. You know, it's not like, oh God, we have to stop this.
No, I agree.
I think you remember in Russia when Obama was president, they were selling monkey dolls that were Obama.
Right. I do recall that. And, you know, I still remember back in the early 2000s, you know, I watched lots of combat sports and that sort of thing. And I seen a lot of Japanese television. And, you know, they would mock a lot of the, you know, black fighters, calling them monkeys, that sort of thing. And, you know, they openly mock them in commercials. So, you know, Asian people out there have a very different look on black people. I would say they are really racist against black people. America, you know, we don't have those sort of things going on.
No. And see what you're talking, when you say really racist, you are talking about systemically racist.
Exactly.
Let me show you how the system, why it's systemic. You know, China and Japan are two of the most homogenous the two most homogenous societies on earth. And I mean, I think Japan is 98 or 99% Japanese. China, it's 96% of one ethnicity. That's the Han Chinese. And the reason they are so homogenous is because they don't want immigrants. They don't allow immigrants.
Right.
Right. And so it's like, so that would seem like it's systemically racist.
Exactly. Yes.
When they hate people so much, they don't want them there.
Yeah.
Now that's racist.
Remember what was going on with when COVID first happened? What was happening to black people out there in those countries? They're getting kicked out.
Well, no, and that was particularly bad in. There's not very many black people in Japan.
Yeah,
there
not many.
Some,
yeah,
there there have been some in China. They're not Chinese, though, because the Chinese do not allow people to become naturalized citizens that are not Chinese. You know, so if you were, you know, if you were from Hong Kong or Taiwan, they would allow you to become Chinese. I guess everyone in Hong Kong is Chinese now. But anyway, so it's for black people that live in China, and even if they're married to a Chinese person, they still have to renew their visas every 6 months.
Right.
And it's not guaranteed that they're going to get renewed. It's like, now that's racism. I mean, during COVID, I remember reading the one story, and I know there were a lot where they were sort of sequestering the black people. But there was a McDonald's with a giant sign that said, no black people allowed. You know, and then I was looking at...
No, that's racist, yes.
No, that's and here's another one. So the China came up and they last year, and they said, you know, they want to get some non-Chinese in there that are like really talented scientists, right? Well, they're not going to let them become citizens because that's not going to happen. But what they will let them do, and this was a first, they were going to allow them to become permanent residents for 5 or 10 years, right? So that was a first. Well, what happened when the government did that? It ignited social networking. And you could not believe the racist comments that were being made just about, I mean, black people got it the worst, but just in general, I mean, the word for people that are not Chinese is foreign trash.
Oh my.
But anyway, you know, so I'm looking at this, you know, this, it was a translation of this social networking because it was all in Chinese. And, you know, China has the biggest censorship machine in the world, right? It's like nothing gets out unless they want it to get out. And here I am, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at this totally, I mean, racist on steroids chats on these social networks. And it's like Chinese government's okay with it. They're okay with it.
You see a lot of that online, but sometimes I wonder, are these people actually being serious, or are they saying these things as in ha ha ha, we're trolling, we're fun?
Oh, absolutely not. It's not ha ha ha. I mean, look what happened to, what's the name of the actor?
Which one?
In front of the, we're calling Taiwan a country.
Oh, you mean the pro wrestler?
Yeah.
John Cena.
If you looked at the social networking after he did his apology.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, they're not fun. They're not trolling. I mean, the stuff that they said about him after he did this groveling apology was appalling.
Yes.
You know? They weren't satisfied. They weren't satisfied with his apology.
Yes,
But it just went on and on. It's like, you don't understand who we are. We are the Chinese, right? I mean, China has this long history of thinking that it's superior, right? And so, you know, we can say, well, you know, whites had their supremacy phase, and, you know, and then there's Russian supremacy, and we've all had these supremacy phases. But I'm telling you, from having studied it, the Chinese are different with their supremacy. And the big difference with Chinese supremacy and the belief in superiority is that they don't think they not only think they're superior to foreigners, they think they're so superior they don't even want them in China.
Right.
They find them to be foreign trash.
Yes. Can you imagine if America was doing that to African Americans? Could you imagine?
Well, I can't imagine America doing it to anyone.
Can you imagine doing it to anyone? I mean, now, then I would agree. Then I would agree. Yes, America is racist 100%.
But it's not. It's absolutely not permitted here. And you know what? And that's, well, not only is it not permitted, it's like it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you know, we have these oddballs that don't like people and they do hate crimes, but it's like, don't tell me for one second it's in the system, because, you know, you're going to come up with something that it's like 0.0001% engaged in it. And I'm going to say that's not systemic.
Right. And by the way, we were talking about, you know, these ideas that start off and, you know, they come from good places, they end bad. You know, we have like the BLM movement. We have, you know, the co-founder, forgetting her name. It was something like Patrice Cullors, I believe that was her name.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I looked into her, and of course you find out that she, you know, she bought a lot of property with some of that donation money. I mean, that's pretty amazing, really. And I'll even push further and say, remember the time when the NFL was doing the whole breast cancer sort of awareness thing with the whole pink sort of color thing going on? You know, most of that proceed money didn't even reach people with cancer.
You know, I end up, and that's horrible beyond belief.
Oh yes.
But the Black Lives Matter, I can't tell you how many times, you know, sitting at my desk doing research, trying to trace how something crazy has happened in America.
Right.
And, you know, so it's like, for example, you know, recently I was looking into the, you know, all these laws that are being considered or executive orders to help transgenders. And this is what I find crazy about it.
Yeah.
Is that I've done research on this, right? And it's like, I know, you know, that, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, transgender children can get growth hormones, puberty blockers. In Oregon, they can have gender reassignment surgery, all without parental consent.
Wow. Right? I didn't know that.
Yes, 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 absolutely. Those three states. And so, you know, I know that, you know, puberty blockers, you know, they've been associated with brain cancer. I'm not brain cancer, different forms of cancer. And they've also been associated with stifling growth or...
I'm not surprised to hear that.
Well, so bone density, so the puberty blocks are associated with lower bone density and they can affect brain development. Cross-sex hormones can cause infertility and different types of cancer, right? And so, you know, so here we have these kids are being assigned, you know, prescribed these drugs. And it's like they've never been tested. The FDA has never tested these drugs for this purpose. But here we have schools that are just, you know, they're turning kids into experimental subjects. Now, the bigger problem is that 80% of these kids are going to desist, which means that they're going to decide they're not transgender and they're okay in their birth bodies. You know, they might end up being heterosexual. They might end up being homosexual, but 80% will end up desisting, right? So now we have the 20% that may go on to have gender reassignment surgery, or maybe they'll be cross dressers. So it's like, so we're the reason that we're going down this path of, you know, prescribing these drugs is because these kids are depressed, right?
Very depressed.
What happens when they get these drugs, right? They're equally depressed. They're equally depressed because now they're suffering from the imposter syndrome, right? It's like, here they are. They're a boy. They're biologically a boy, but they're acting like a girl, you know? And it's like, you think that's a little hard for a kid to reconcile? But let's say they get past that and they have the gender reassignment surgery. Okay, so they have the gender reassignment surgery. Okay, at that point, right, they should be very happy, right? They're you know, this is why they were depressed, supposedly, right? Nobody yes. really knows. But now there are 19 times, the one study, the only study that seems to have, that's recognized as being potentially valid, shows that suicides are 19 times higher for people with gender reassignment surgery.
Correct, yes.
Psychiatric hospitalizations, 2.8 times higher. Suicide attempts, 4.8 times higher. So all I'm trying to say...
More than half of transgender male teens definitely have attempted suicide, according to a lot of studies out there.
Absolutely. And these can be transgenders that are taking puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, right? They're supposed to be the things that saved them from this.
From the curse.
But anyway, so getting back to where, so I'm sitting there and I'm going through this and it's like, and why do we have, President Biden go and tell them trans youth, I've got your back, and we're passing these laws, this Equality Act, which has nothing to do with gender equality and everything to do with transgender equality. And it's like, why are we doing all this stuff to encourage people to take this path that has so much danger on it?
Oh, yeah.
And that, that we have not sufficiently studied by any stretch of the imagination. And you know what I find? Black Lives Matter. Mm. So that's sort of where I started this conversation. It's like, they are behind so much that seems like crazy.
It is a little crazy, though. I mean, that's too young to be putting this sort of thing on the plates of many young children out there, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's pretty young to make them to start thinking about their sexual identity. I mean, that's kind of insane, if you ask me.
Oh, I think it's totally insane. But then starting to give them drugs as early as 8. To prevent puberty.
I mean, that's abuse.
It is. So that's another one of these things that's like, this is just nutty. And, I've actually studied, what are they doing about transgenders, all over the world?
Right.
So I've gone through and looked at every country that actually reports data, right? Most countries don't even allow people to change their names.
Yes.
And they definitely don't let them change their gender. Some of them let them change them if they have gender reassignment surgery, right?
Could you imagine, Kathleen, if you went the full route and, you kind of transitioned into a man, Kathleen, and let's say like maybe 3-4 years later, you're completely unhappy with your decision and you're like, I want to be a woman again. And then you just like slit your wrist in a bathtub.
Yeah.
That happens. Yeah.
No, I know it does.
Oh, my God.
And, it's funny. When I was reading this one was this sort of this comprehensive study going through all of it. And they were like, well, I mean, I think, it goes, well, I think we have to realize that people that want to change their sex, they have psychological issues that are rather extreme, And so I'm sitting there and I'm reading it and it's like, okay, so... why aren't we taking the psychological route first?
Mm. Yes.
I mean, because it's like, this is just, it's madness. It's absolutely madness. I mean, there's just, I was looking at this article and it was on, it said Iran was the transgender leader.
Really?
Right. Okay.
That's
all right.
Hard to
now,
believe.
Now you're going to be surprised, right? So I read this and I'm like, it's homosexuality is punishable by death in Iran.
It must
How
be
can
a
they
joke.
Possibly be
yeah.
the transgender leader, right? Well, they're tied together, Michael.
Mm,
the reason is because it is punishable by death to be a homosexual. What they do is they do gender reassignment surgery. And so then the people will be fine.
Mm, I see.
So they're a leader in gender reassignment surgery because of that. But I'm sitting there and it's like, but aren't we sort of doing the same thing? I mean, because we're sitting there and, I think of the 80% of kids that desist, most of them will end up being homosexuals. And so if we're now encouraging homosexuals to change their sex, how is that different?
A good question. Very good question. And by the way, I'm not anti-gay or anti-trans. I'm someone who's all about free choice, freedom of choice. If that's the sort of route you want to go down, I mean, have at it. But that's not really, what I would do for myself, in other words, but some people are very extreme, Kathleen.
Look at Bruce Jenner
or Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, you know, and you know what? It's sort of like the race issue. You know, I don't know people that really, they just don't care. It's like, I mean, they just don't care if somebody likes men or they like women or they like nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's your own personal decision. I mean, we all have our own lives.
Yeah.
we're trying to survive the pandemic. You know, we don't really care. You know.
But when you go after the impressionable,
though, up and down the street here, you know, and it's like I could care less.
I'm with you on that one, but I'm against those that are very impressionable, like children. I still think it's very bad to put those sort of thoughts into the minds of children. I'm a classical liberal, you know, I don't really give, I was going to say the F word here, but you know, I don't really care about much, but that sort of thing, you know, dealing with kids, that's not right in my book.
Oh, that's lunacy. It's absolute lunacy.
Oh yes. It's not right. And you see, that's the other issue I have though. In terms of like religion, you know, we see these evangelicals take advantage of their own flock. I don't think God, Jesus, I don't think any sort of deity kind of wants you to acquire all this kind of wealth. I don't think they want you to fly a private jet to Florida or with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, all these sort of things. You know, I don't think God wants you to be doing that. If there is a God, I don't think he wants you to be doing anything like that. In my opinion, I could be wrong.
No, you know, it's funny you said that because I was listening to a priest last night and I'd never really thought about it. And he was like, well, you know, when you change your sex, you're playing God.
You are. Yeah.
Because if you were created a woman.
Yeah.
Then you're a woman.
You're a woman. It's like, biologically.
If you change that decision, you're playing God. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, that's really an interesting thought.
It is. It is. And again, going back to slavery, you know, you see it in the Bible, you see it all the time. And that's one of the many reasons why I'm not, you know, ultra religious or anything like that. You know, I'm not someone who is religious much at all, but I have my own morals and values. You know, I don't really need to read a book to know those sort of things. But all these sort of religions out there, I think they do help you, though, to some regards. But I'm someone who doesn't want to be a part of any of these groups either, faith groups, religious groups, any of that. I still think, again, these all start with great ideas, but then they sort of snowball into, you know, feces, for the lack of a better word, Kathleen.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, we're lucky that we live in the United States because.
Very lucky.
We really do have freedom of religion here.
We do. Thank God.
It's not everywhere. But it's here.
You see what I did right there, Kathleen? You know, I'm kind of like borderline open-minded atheist, and I still say God. I still say, you know, God bless, thank God, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think most Americans do. I mean, we're a nation.
Are you religious, by the way, Kathleen?
No, I'm not. I'm not religion. I certainly respect religion. I've studied religion. I was raised Catholic. You know, and as soon as I was confirmed in fifth grade, I stopped going to church because my mother and father sent me there and said, you know, you can go by yourself now. And it's like, yeah, I don't really want to go there. I don't really know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I hear you.
But you know what? I certainly respect religion.
Me too. Yeah.
I certainly respect religious values.
Yes, you definitely have to respect those values of others, even though we don't really see life through their eyes. We sort of have to sort of tolerate their religious views. And, you know, that's when we. Well, talk about other, when we talk about, you know, religion, we sort of, you know, when we dive deep, you sort of start seeing, you know, there's like Jews, for instance, you know, they sort of see themselves as being the supreme being. And then you have the Muslim faction out there who sort of see themselves in the same light. And then
Michael, every religion has that position.
They do. Yeah.
It's from a very, very long time ago.
Yes.
Right. That
very,
you know,
archaic.
That was, you know, you had to be, each religion became, we're the chosen ones, you know? And so, you know, you take our path and you go to heaven, you know? And so there was never really any religious freedom or tolerance, if you will, but all religions had that.
Yes, they do.
But honestly, I, I don't think that many of, you know, I mean, the Orthodox of any faith will, you know, still take that position, but it's not something that's widely recognized, although you are more likely to find it in a non-secular Muslim majority nation.
They say the biggest crimes in the world, Kathleen, have been committed by those that are ultra religious. Would you agree with that?
You know, I haven't really studied it. I remember looking at it. If I were to look at, you know, some of like the major crimes that have happened in the world in the past 20 years, they've been related to religious zealotry. Yeah.
Most likely. Yes. Chances are they were ultra religious, ultra extreme. And even today, you know, we have these Christians now that are just a few degrees from becoming extremist, to be honest.
Well, I think anyone that's Orthodox can be
a little extreme.
And all that we can hope for is that they don't engage in violence.
By the way, someone in the chat was asking if you are a redhead, but no, she is a blonde. I believe you're blonde, right? You're not a redhead.
No, I'm not a redhead.
Okay. Someone in the chat was asking, and you know,
never been a redhead.
Never been. Doesn't look good on you.
I have no idea.
By the way, speaking of people with red hair, you know, I did have an incident one time. I wouldn't really even call it an incident, but it was really the first time someone has said something to me. And it was back in San Diego. You know, I was visiting a ex-girlfriend. I was trying to go to her apartment. I sort of locked myself out. I needed the sort of key for the gate. And I saw a gentleman walking across and I waved to him. I asked him to let me in. And, you know, he sort of made this sort of remark, like, you know, he smiled and he's like, as long as you don't steal anything. And I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? I didn't say anything, but I was a little surprised that he was, you know, saying this to me so openly. But, you know, I'm someone that has like a sense of humor. So I just sort of smiled and laughed. I just thought, wow, that came out of left field. But of course, I wasn't really offended. You know, words don't really offend me, but I just thought that was kind of interesting coming from this redheaded gentleman. You know, he wasn't really as presentable. He didn't look as good as I did. You know, I was wearing a fairly nice clothing and, you know, he was wearing, you know, like what he wore to work or something. So I was a little thrown back. I just thought, man, I look, you know, I'm fairly dressed better than you. I'm not going to steal anything. I just thought, wow, my God.
Well, you know what? Are you from the West Coast, Michael?
Yeah, I sure am. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was born on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are expressions like that.
Oh, I know. I wasn't really,
you know,
like,
I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
it wasn't,
I mean,
matter or anything.
I hear people saying, you know, watch out or I'll kill you. You know, like, yeah, they don't really mean it.
Oh, I know. I didn't think he was that serious. I just thought, my goodness, he's so open with it. But I appreciated his humor. I wasn't angry with him. But yeah, so I think some people, though, in some cases, they probably would have got really angry.
I suppose. If it goes back to the conversation that we were having earlier, though, it's like it's a sensitivity thing. I mean, you know, and for all I know, there's a heightened sensitivity with what's been going on for the last year.
Oh, yes.
To anything that could be construed as racist or discriminatory.
The chat is asking if you are Norwegian, I guess they're asking.
No. My name is Kathleen, which means that I have Irish descent.
Ah. And yes, by the way, I am of mixed race, so I'm not really accepted by anyone. You know, I'm a bit of an outsider.
Or you could say you're accepted by everyone.
Or yeah, I'm accepted by everyone. I'm a bit of a mutant. So, you know, I'm kind of accepted to a certain degree. That's true.
No, I don't, you know, Michael, I hope you're not experiencing any type of.
Oh, no.
Anywhere.
No, nothing like that. I mean, everyone is fairly nice to me, especially when I leave like this small town I live in. Everyone is pretty nice to me for the most part. I've never really had, you know, any trouble with anyone. But, you know, growing up, I did get into a few fights with some black gentlemen. That is true. But that did not sway my opinion on any race or anything. I still have, you know, black friends today. You know, I always have, but it's never really bothered me or anything like that. But I do know for some folks out there, you have like an issue with a certain race out there that sort of dictates their entire life, it seems, for some folks. Not everyone, but I'm sure you know those folks out there,
Michael. I really think it's a very, very tiny percentage.
Very small, I would say, too.
I mean, I really do. I mean, you know, the, you know, racism, discriminatory thoughts, they correlate pretty closely with education, and it always has. And so, you know, where you're likely to find some type of inappropriate thoughts or let's say actions is with people that they're just, you know, they haven't had the exposure, you know, not the education, they've not had the exposure to people. Because, you know, I mean, in the United States, we actually did a very, very good job of eliminating discrimination as pertains to ethnicity and race when we were able to develop, you know, integrated neighborhoods and workplaces. Because, you know, once people, you know, people have their stereotypes of every group in the world, really.
Oh, yes.
But once people meet somebody, the stereotypes go away and they become people. They don't become Black people, Latino people, Asian people, white people, Italians, Irish, whatever. You know, they just become people.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
You know, and to me, it's like, you know, I was, you know, we used to have this, what we called this melting pot, and I know people, you know, debated it. But it was about 20 or 30 years ago. And we said, you know, in America, we said, you know, it's just not right. It's just not right to ask people to integrate. And when we stopped that, you know, when we said, you know, it's okay. I mean, for, you know, for some time, and particularly in California, you know, for the Latino population, they started teaching people in Spanish, right? It's like, we can't force English on these people, right? And it's like, but then the Latinos couldn't, you know, they were sort of stifled in terms of their economic opportunities, right? Because
right,
they could only get economic opportunities where you could speak Spanish.
Yes.
You know? And so, you know, so we've gone down this path, and I know we're continuing down this path. And it's like the only system that has ever worked to have, you know, multi-ethnic racial populations, you know, get along as one is one where people, you know, sometimes they're forced to, you know, to hang around with people that they might not otherwise hang around with.
Very true.
Just for the purpose of understanding that we're all the same, you know,
yes.
And to me, it's like, you know, and it's one of the things that I teach college from time to time. And when I talk about this, it's like, you know, white people tend to hang out with white people. Black people tend to hang out with Black people, Asians, Latinos. It's the same. You know, it's like, do yourself a favor and make an effort to go and talk to somebody that's different from your in-group.
We are all one. That's for sure. And by the way, we do have a caller. Caller, you are live. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Deacon. Good evening. Very interesting topic tonight from Mrs. Brush. Hello.
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Well, like Mrs. Brush was saying, it's not as easy to integrate between races because I have tried it. I guess it was easier when I was in college and high school, but now that I'm in my 40s, I tried to integrate. I have tried several times, and I don't want to mention the exact race, but they kind of want to be by themselves. So what you have to say about that? I mean, even if you try, you still have this negative feedback where they give you a look or hi, how are you, and kind of like move along, you know?
Well, yeah, first of all, I think that if you're trying to strike up a conversation or something like that, it can be challenging, although I do it all the time in my neighborhood. And I don't mean like my block. I mean, anyone that lives within a vicinity, I have a very easy time of doing it. And because there's, you know, there's some degree of comfort because we all live in the same neighborhood. But the other thing that I've done where I found it can be very successful is to join different types of community groups and organizations. And so, okay. You know, you're in the group and eventually people will talk to you and you'll got experience you. The situation of we're all people.
The community organizations kind of try something like maybe YMCA, some even sporting events or something like that.
Or sports clubs.
Sports clubs, okay.
I mean, I do it at the gym all the time. The gym right, I go to, I'm as a white person, I'm definitely in the minority, and I do it all the time. I just go up and strike a conversation. It's mostly with actually we have a good mix of Blacks, Latinos, and Asians, and I just go up and talk to anyone, and it works beautifully.
Right, and also integrating maybe when you get to that second step where. Okay, now you have, you're past the point of having small chat, maybe having a group dinner or something, and you can invite a couple of minorities or some minorities into that dinner. What do you think the topics of conversation should be? Because sometimes you cannot talk about everything, like I'm white, right? But I don't sound it, but I am. If we are all white people together, it's not like we're talking about racist things, but, you know, there's a way that we talk together that if they were minorities, we would have to kind of watch what we're saying or how we say it. It could be misunderstood.
Well, first of all, I would probably go for something like a coffee before I'd go for dinner. I have watched this. In fact, I was just on this, I was just listening to this podcast by The Economist, and it was on race. And the commentator was a white guy, and he was really struggling. He was shaking. He was nervous because he felt like that he was some type of imposter talking about race because he was white. And I just thought, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, it's like, you're a white person, just talk about it. You know what? And you can talk about how you feel, because right now, you know, there's white people are experiencing a lot of racism themselves. And so they should certainly absolutely. Be able to be an empathetic participant in any conversation. Now, I realize that, you know, people of color might say, oh, you don't experience racism. But it's like, I would just be persistent on that point because, you know, we are all in this together. And, you know, near as I can tell, you know, there is no group that's not experiencing racism. I mean, it's certainly not now. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at policies coming out of the government, you know, and it's like, you know, the money to the farmers, right? And it's like, no white farmers need apply. And then they came out with all this money for businesses from the federal government. And they came out with a prioritized list. And on the priority list was everyone but white men. You know, so that's why I say it's like, look, everyone's experiencing discrimination now. This is a perfect time to talk about it.
Right. And by the way, caller, is this Tony?
Yes. How are you, Mr. Deacon?
I'm good. And by the way, I don't think what you are like experiencing has anything to do with race. I think it has to do with just the nature of your character, Tony. You know, a lot of people have been talking, you know, it sort of doesn't really sound like rumors.
Right.
It kind of sounds like facts to me. You know, what you've been doing has nothing to do with your race. It has to do with the nature of your character, Tony. And from what I heard, the last time, you know, people were talking about you, doesn't really seem like you're a desirable character to be around, ultimately. It seems like, you know, you're problematic.
Mr. Deacon, is I wrote you yesterday.
Yeah, by the way, we're not going to do this right now, by the way. I know you wrote me and all this, but, you know, we're doing a show here. But again, your problem is not with your race. It's just because you're kind of like a liar and a little delusional. That's why.
Not really, because I'm a U.S. citizen and I've already, you know, contacted my representative, and you put my ID on your program, which I would like for you to please remove, because I really enjoy your show, but I am a U.S. citizen. I want your email so that I can send you my passport and my ID from Texas and New York. And just because I'm here doing some work at the Panama Canal.
Look, Tony, I don't want to get into this with you here on the air. It's not very professional.
Right.
And that's kind of been the problem with you. And you're kind of proving my case even further, my friend. So I'm going to have to let you go. I apologize there, Kathleen, but this is someone who is a little insane. I'm sorry you had experienced that, Kathleen. It got a little dark here.
Yeah, I was just answering the question.
I know. My goodness, I was not expecting that, Kathleen, but that's, you know, what happens when you do a live show. You know, everyone can call in. And people get crazy here. And that was a great example of that. My God. But yeah, sometimes it's not because the color of your skin that people don't really want to be around you. It's kind of because of your total outlook on life, your whole perspective.
Well, you know, and it goes back to, you know, the conversation that we had earlier, and that is that most people don't care about anything except the context of one's character.
Right.
They don't care what they look like.
I agree. We don't care what you look like. Most people don't judge you that way. They judge you on the actions that you do, that you carry on. But yes, Kathleen, I mean, my goodness, there's so much more to talk to you about here, but we are sort of running out of time here. But before we do, I know we sort of brushed along and we sort of mentioned Caitlyn Jenner, but we didn't really get into it too much. I did want to get your, you know, opinion on one Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, I don't really have an opinion on Caitlyn Jenner.
Nothing at all?
No, not really. I mean,
you're not shocked that she's running for the spot as governor?
I know stuff like that doesn't shock me. And I, you know, and to me, it's like transgender, straight, I don't care. You know, I mean, I've listened to Caitlyn Jenner and I listened to her just like I'd listen to anyone else. And frankly, if she had the best policies and I was in California, I'd vote for her.
Sure.
I honestly don't care. You know, I mean, I look at politicians today and so many of them are, you know, they're dishonest. They're not very smart. and it's like, I just want somebody that's going to go in there and do the right things and be an honest steward of, you know, of the state or the nation or whatever their position is.
I agree with you. And I think Caitlyn Jenner made a mistake, though, running as a Republican, though. Maybe if she ran as a Democrat, there would be a, you know, better a chance there.
Well, you know, I don't, you know, again, I listened to her and, you know, she's got positions that are entirely different than are, you know, currently being pursued in California. And, you know, when I look at some of the stuff that's going on in California, you know, like, you know, we saw that, I heard the other day that 17 Walgreens were going out of business. And, you know, and so I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure I know why that happened because I had looked into that 2014 law that said it was, you know, basically legal to steal anything under $950, which I thought was totally insane. And, you know, and so I looked into it and it's like, well, it is insane. You know, I mean, the Walgreens didn't happen from, you know, ad hoc pilfering. You know, this legislation had inadvertently, although foreseeably, you know, ignited organized retail theft, you know. And so you have these organized crime rings that have people that go in and steal, you know, $899 worth of stuff at one store, then go to another store, then go to another store. And it's like, well, that's sort of insane.
Oh, yeah.
And then in January 1st, they had the Racial Justice Act in California, which basically says you can't charge somebody with a felonious crime, even if certifiably guilty, if there is statistical evidence that people of one race are disproportionately charged or convicted of a specific crime or enhancement. And it's like, that is insane. You know, it's like, I quickly ran the numbers and like in Los Angeles, the population is 26% Latino, 8.1% Black. Well, according to the Los Angeles Police Department, 70 to 80% of homicides are gang related. And gang membership is estimated to be 85% Black and Latino.
That's right.
So it's like, okay, so if I'm doing the math there, then about 60% of those homicides will not, the 60% of murders are not going to be prosecuted because they're going to fall into the disproportionate category, you know? And then I look at what's going on the southern border, and it's like, I don't know. Are, you know, it could be that some Californians are looking for something that's different.
I agree. Yes. And yes, I speak to lots of cops, know lots of people in law enforcement, you know, and they all tell me if it's a shooting, a stabbing, you know, it's most likely going to be Black or Hispanic male. In most cases, that's exactly what it is, especially out here in California, obviously. By the way, we do have a caller. Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air.
Yeah, this is Dave.
What's up, Dave? Do you have a question here for Kathleen?
Oh, she's reminded me of a story. Years ago, I was dealing with these guys from Mexico City. And we were up in Sacramento, meeting up in Sacramento, and we were out at a steakhouse. And so they kept, because it was getting close to Christmas, they kept joking about Black Burro. And so finally I had to ask them, like, what they were talking about. And what it is it, instead of getting like a lump of coal in your sock, what they would do is they would give out a Black Burro, which represented giving somebody a slave or a Black man, because then you're harnessed with the slave for your entire life and you have to pay for him. And I was sitting there looking at my dad, because I was there with my dad, and I couldn't believe it. I did not realize that the racism down there in Mexico against Black people was like that.
Well, you know what? You know what's interesting that you've said that, Dave, is that, you know, as we have the massive amount of people coming across the southern border, you know, and I've listened to political commentators just a commentator say, well, you know, the reason Americans don't like this is because they don't like brown people. And I have studied racism in Latin America. And you know, to me, it's like, if you're trying to curtail racism in the United States, you ought to be careful about what you're doing, because there's never been anti-racism movements throughout Latin America. And so without having, you know, a concerted anti-racist movement in a region which is Black, Indian, white, you know, it's like, you're going to have a lot of racism. I mean, it's going to be there. And it is. I mean, I can tell you stories, you know, I think your story is fantastic. But I mean, it's like in Brazil, you unarmed Black people get shot down every day.
Yeah, in the favelas. Yeah.
Exactly, in the streets.
Yeah,
I mean, in Rio de Janeiro, I mean, they get killed. Unarmed Black people are killed multiple times a day.
Yeah, that's a real violent place, by the way.
You know, you know what? In Ecuador, you know, and this is current. You know, the police believe their job is to get Black people off the street because they see them as a danger to society. You know, and so it's like, yeah, it's really bad. And, you know, and it's like, we really got to be careful. I mean, we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be importing racism into the United States. I was looking at this study the other day about anti-Semitism, and it's like, wow, Latinos that have just come into the United States are 300% more likely to be anti-Semitic than a white person.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yes, 300%. But you see that it starts to fade over time as they're in America and they see it's like, no, 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 we don't do that here. I mean, it doesn't disappear, but it does go down.
Yeah, once they're more exposed to these sort of people is what you're saying, right?
Right. And you're exposed to America and Americans. And it's like, no, that behavior is not acceptable here.
Yeah, it's not right.
No, you did that too.
Yeah. Carl, do we lose you?
No, I'm here. I was just curious. The only idea I have possibly is, you know, maybe what we could do is take those white people that are out protesting for BLM and then send them down south.
Well, you know what? It's absolutely, I highly recommend it to anyone that thinks America is this racist hellhole. It's like, take a trip outside the United States and then come back. And when you want to kiss the ground, when you get to customs, you've had a good education.
Yep. Oh, yes. We're very lucky to be U.S. citizens, that's for sure. It would be very unfortunate if we were born somewhere else. Then we would have a real culture shock, that's for sure. Most of these people out there that are very vocal about these sort of issues, none of them really have spent time outside of America, I believe, Kathleen.
Well, I think they haven't. One, they haven't spent time outside of America. And I think, two, they're really not familiar with what has happened in America in the last 70 years.
Oh, yes.
It has been a transformation like the world has never seen.
And before we let you go, caller, are you a racist?
No, I've known some racists and also some like white separatists and all that business. I've known all these people.
There's not too many of them, though, like a classical racist sort of guy. Not too many, though.
No.
If you think about it.
No, not many. No, I shockingly.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that are like.
When I was a kid in Los Angeles, it was like far more racist than it is now.
You see more people that are rather more prejudiced, I would say. But not, you know, blatantly racist. Not really, though.
I've been around for a long time, and it's like it's night and day. It's night and day in America.
Oh yes, go ahead, caller.
Well, anyway, thanks a lot. A great guest, by the way, Michael.
Oh yes, we like Kathleen Brush very much here. That's why she's here.
Yes, exactly. And anyway, you two have a good evening.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, of course.
And by the way, Kathleen, we didn't really get to talk about your book too much.
Well, you know, we didn't get to talk about either of my books, but if anyone is interested in what I've been talking about, it comes from my books. It comes from the research that forms the contents of my books. And by the way, my books are, you know, they're very inexpensive. I'm not trying to make money. I'm just trying to educate people because I want them to know what a great country this is.
Right.
And also, if you read any of my books, you will see that, you know, there's 10 references per page. It's almost 10, 5 to 10. And the reason I want to say that is that my books are not about opinions. I'm a data hog, and all I want to do is let the data tell the story.
That's right. And of course, if you want to find her work, just go to Amazon.com and search Kathleen Brush, and you'll find all her work. Her latest book was America's Discrimination Circus. And by the looks of it, by the way, Kathleen, you have got some pretty good reviews. Everyone seems to like the book.
Well, I was on pins and needles because I know I'm talking about something that a lot of people don't want to hear about.
It's a very sensitive subject. That's true. And Kathleen, before we do cut you loose here, you know, when COVID initially happened, what did you, you know, initially think was going on, Kathleen?
You mean where the virus came from?
Well, anything really in terms of COVID when it first hit. Were you stunned, shocked? What was your first initial reaction?
Well, I think, you know, it took time. You know, I mean, first it was like, okay, there's this virus over in China. And then it's like, oh, it's over here. And then it's really, you know, contagious. and on and on. So, I mean, but, you know, to me, I just roll with the flow. It's like, well, I guess you're going to end up doing a lot more research. And that's what I did.
So you power forward, and of course, no one in your family, your friends have contracted COVID. I hope not.
Oh, no, I know lots of people that contracted COVID, and it all happened early on before they really got the word out. But, you know, everyone survived, and it all worked out. We're all vaccinated now, and we're living to tell the tale.
Very nice. Okay, I did not know that. In terms of COVID and its origins, you know, the media has been going back and forth. I mean, I've gotten in trouble myself here on YouTube going back last year saying that this most likely did come from a lab in China. I think that was kind of controversial to say now, but fast forward in time, it seems like that's probably the possible cause.
Well, you know, I've actually spent a lot of time studying China, you know, their history, their behaviors, and, you know, it seemed plausible.
Right. It just makes me wonder how long until there's a conflict between us and China, full head-on sort of conflict, I'm thinking.
You know, I'm really not sure. You know, China carries a lot of weight in the world right now.
I guess.
And it's very intimidating. And I'd be curious to see if anyone is willing to stand up to them.
We will find out in due time. Once again, Kathleen, I do want to thank you for being a part of the program. It's been a great conversation. I hope we can do this again in the future.
Great. I'd love that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And there she goes, boys and girls. That was our guest, Kathleen Brush. I thought she was incredible. I hope you enjoyed the guest as much as I did. I was pretty stunned. And yes, we are going to shut the show down pretty early here tonight. I apologize for that. But yes, we weren't here for a long time. We were just here for a good time. But don't worry, I will return again very, very soon. And holy shit, yeah. Pray for caller Tony. Yes, David Rubini, you are correct. Who knows what that was all about? But yes, the previous episode we heard from this gentleman named Tony, and wow, he was kind of insane, to be honest. I really don't want to conversate with the guy. That's someone you don't want to discuss anything with. You know, I don't really care to talk to this individual at all. Yeah, you are offended, I'm sure, that, you know, we talked about you here, but to be honest with you, you know, I don't really give a fuck about you, don't care if you live or die, you know, you're not really interesting to me, you know, your story is not really one I care about, I don't care about you, don't really care about what you do in your life, I hope now you realize that, you know, I don't care about you and I don't want you to call in again, don't want nothing to do with you, essentially. Yes, peace and love from David Rubini. He is correct. That's how I feel too. Peace and love. You go over there. I go over here. I'm on the happy bus. You are on the angry, psychopathic bus. You stay the fuck over there. I stay over here and everything is honky-dory. You know, that's the way I see it. It's not very hard to see it that way. You know, I don't really deal with lawyers or attorneys or anything like that, you know. You want to find me, I'm not hard to find. That's sort of the thing I do. Don't really, you know, get everyone else involved. Not really my cup of tea. So, you know, if you don't want that, then, you know, go the fuck away. You know, just get away from me. That's what I would suggest. Go away. Stay away. Yes, thank you, Jesus Christ. Yes, Lilith, you are right. My God, that reminds me, we need to play some Paula White. Praise Jesus. Yes, we do. We need to praise Jesus Christ. And that's what we're going to do right now from one Paula White, the spiritual advisor from one Donald Trump, the former spiritual advisor. I kind of miss her. I kind of wish Joe Biden would have hired our good friend Paula White. That would have been a good one. Oh my God. Strike
until you have victory. For every enemy that is aligned against you, let there be that we would strike the ground, for you will give us victory, God. I hear a sound of abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of shouting and singing. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of an abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of an abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. The Lord says it is done. The Lord says it is done. The Lord says it is done. For I hear victory, 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 victory in the corridors of heaven. In the corridors of heaven, victory, 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 victory. For angels are being released right now. Angels are being dispatched right now. Amanda aka ata raka te da baka sanda ata ambo osa tata rite eke banda ata rike di diasha ta. For angels have even been dispatched from Africa right now. Africa right now. Africa right now. From Africa right now. They're coming here. They're coming here. In the name of Jesus, from South America. They're coming here. They're coming here. They're coming here. They're coming here. From Africa. From South America. Angelic forces. Angelic reinforcement. Angelic reinforcement. Angelic reinforcement. Fika hata anda ata ora batarata anda eke eke manda rasata. For I hear the sound of victory. 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 I hear the sound of victory.
Wow. She just keeps going on and never ends with Paula White. My goodness. She just doesn't stop. It keeps going on and on and on. It's incredible, really. It really is. It really, really is incredible, boys and girls. And, you know, it's been a fun show this evening. I had a great time with all of you this evening. I know I'm kind of sad. I don't want it to end myself. I wish this sort of thing never ended. You know, I kind of have been known as the sort of guy that makes it kind of like the night seems to last forever. That's kind of the guy I am. I make the night seem like they last forever. It's true. It's very, very true. It's very, very crazy. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I do want to thank you for being around here and hanging out with me in the chat. I see you, Tinkerbell, Vic Grimes, Max Cole, Lilith, Stephen, Dr. Strange, Love, Enlightened, and Prepared. I think that's who you are there. I can't really read the chat from this far away. And yes, the Pale Horse, I think that's who it is out there. I'm not quite sure. But my God, we've had a tremendous show yet again for all of you out there. My God, I'm just completely sad that it's ending. I never want this to end. I get really, really depressed about it. I really do. Yes. Lilith, amen, I agree. David Rubini, yes. Deacon Strong, I like that hashtag. I really do. Once again, I do want to thank all the international listeners out there for hanging out with me. It's been a bit of a rattlesnake, boys and girls. It really kind of was. And Max Cole says it sounded great from the road. I think he's talking about the program. I think he was listening on the road. I'm not quite sure if he's driving a truck or a small car. I hope the sound wasn't too bad. You know, we are live, so I don't really know how things sound. But you're saying things sounded good, so I'm going to go with you on that one. Once again, boys and girls, if you want bonus content, please go to patreon.com/MichaelDeacon, and that is where you'll find gold. There's plenty of episodes there, and believe me, there's some really good episodes there where we talk about the history of the program and many, many other subjects that I can't really talk about here. You know, those things get me in trouble here on YouTube, so I can't really tell you everything. And Max Cole says, oh yeah, from the SUV, man, fantastic. All right, I'm glad to know that things are rocking and rolling in the SUV out there. It's very, very cool. Once again, I do want to thank all of you out there for being a part of the program. Yes, definitely come on in again. And of course, take us on the road with you on iTunes, Stitcher, CastBox. That's what I love. Just remember to search Michael Deacon, and that's where you will find it all. Once again, boys and girls, thank you so much for being a part of the program. Yes, you are a part of the program. Yes, you're out there listening to the sound of my voice. Thank you so much. We'll do this again on the other side. And with that said, I'm Michael Deacon. And the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time.